fit pencil in, I guess, right? Well, or that was the fox that pulled one.
That was the fox that pulled one.
This Amateur Radio Roundtable is brought to you in part by ICOM America.
All right, I think we're back on with Echo. Now the Echo's gone. Hey, everybody, welcome to Amateur Radio Roundtable. I'm Tom Medlin, W5KUB, and this is Amateur Radio Roundtable. And if you're watching out there on the Internet, we're glad to have you. If you're new, let us know in the chat room. Some people said you're having a little trouble finding us again after that shutdown. Hey, if you're listening on WBCQ, International Shortwave Station, on 5130, shoot us an email to tom@w5kub.com and let us know where you are. You can join the show tonight if you have internet access. Just go to w5kub.com and... Okay, I'm getting all kinds of reports back. We're trying something new tonight to resolve a YouTube problem. My audio may be a little hot, so I'll just turn that down a little bit right there. All right, hey, great show tonight. We got a new announcement tonight. We're bringing in a new segment, which I'm really excited about. Katie's back with us tonight. We've got Glenn with us. We've got Bill. I think Bill's in the chat room. And we're just going to have a good time tonight. So let's jump out there and see what Katie has been up to the last couple weeks. I haven't seen her in a while. Katie, how you doing, Katie?
I've been hiding.
Well, Katie,
hello,
what have you been
everybody.
Doing?
Oh, sorry, I goofed my... I was playing around with my camera there. Well, hello from Sundance, Wyoming, where it is... cold, and there's a lot of snow on the ground right now. We got our first winter storm on Labor Day weekend, which is not unusual for Wyoming, and last week it was in the 90s. We get, 8 inches of snow, and it's heavy, wet stuff. Downtown today went down, and there's tree branches down everywhere. A lot of people lost power. We lost some power here, but of course, first thing I looked at this morning when I looked out the window, besides looking at my tomatoes, which are all covered at the moment, and fingers crossed they'll be okay. All of the antennas are good, but it's funny. All the guidelines still have like a coat of snow on all of them from because it's just that heavy, wet. It's like a spring snow out there, but it'll probably be in the 80s again later on this week. But so I just thought I'd just let everybody know in case you hadn't seen the news on Shack Chat back on Ham Radio Outlet's page. I did leave Ham Radio Outlet. I had decided to move on in my career. Nothing, no bad, no secrets, nothing like that. But for most of my career, I've actually been in government, nonprofit, and I was really kind of missing that. And I found a job opening came up here for my county in prevention. So I'm going to be working on community prevention and really excited about that. So I started my new job last week, and so now I have to commute 4 miles a day, darn it. So today I actually had to go out in the snow downtown, but I might actually be a little more active on ham radio now that I'm not doing it all day for work.
So you're driving.
And I are getting ready for the contesting season, and so I'll miss everybody, of course, but
are you driving?
I'm not going to go too far.
Are you driving 4 miles each way?
Yeah, 4 miles each way. I don't know if I can handle it.
Do you have a mobile? Do you have a mobile rig installed? I mean, like an HF rig?
I actually do. I have a 8900 in the car.
Cool.
So yeah, I've got all the local stuff programmed in. But so if I want to chat with anybody,
now, wait a minute. I'm talking HF. 8900 is not HF, is
oh,
it?
Oh, Well, it's got, I think it's 8900. Isn't that what we have in there?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has 6 meters.
Oh, it has 6 meter, but.
Okay.
10 meter, yeah.
All right. Well.
Anyway, so yes, I did. So I have retired from ham radio as a job. You know, for the past 16 years, actually, I've been involved with ham radio either in as a career or in a volunteer position and leadership roles, and just decided, you know, it's time to step back a little bit, let somebody else take the lead on doing things, especially, and there's some really good active YLs out there, and I'm really excited to see them take on some roles and that are a little more public and active so people can see, you know, the activity levels of hams out there. And I expect I'll probably get a little more radio active as well. So I'm excited.
Hey,
I'm still here on the Amateur Radio Roundtable.
Yeah, and you better never leave. But I did some searching on the internet.
Yeah.
And were you working at the ARRL? Because I think that's where Dwayne met you.
We met at Hamvention, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yep, we're coming up on our 12th anniversary this year. But yeah, we met at Hamvention, so you never know. You can find love in ham radio events sometimes.
All right. Hey, just real quick, has he got a haircut yet or anything?
No, he's not going to. He's got, I don't care hair, because he's, you know, retired and works for himself now. So we went visiting the kids and the grandkids this weekend, and we were trying to put a little pigtail in Maddie's hair, granddaughter, and so we had to put one in Grandpa's hair as well. He's actually rocking the hippie haircut pretty good now.
Dwayne, lean over a little bit. Let's see your hair, Dwayne.
Really looking awful right now, but yeah, there, you got to get closer.
Oh man,
there he is.
I think I've seen you on some movie or something.
I think it's longer than mine. I think he looks like Jeff Bridges now.
Santa Claus this year.
Yeah,
he's gonna play Santa Claus. In fact, that'd be good for our show. What we'll do, we'll have a 48-hour Christmas marathon here, and we'll have him run it and be web Santa Man or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump over.
So that's the big. You know, that's the big news. If you hadn't seen the news yet, and it's no big deal. It's, you know, no big secret or anything like that. And I, you know, I got a nice message from the owner of HRO, said I'll always be a member of the HRO family. So,
well, that's cool. That's cool.
Hopefully that means they still get a
discount. Maybe they'll still give you a discount.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump in here. Glenn, how you doing, Glenn?
Oh, hanging in there, busting my butt, trying to get the next book done. I've got about 7 more weeks before the deadline and 5 projects left to build, so it's cranking. And it's kind of funny, Katie, I may be doing something similar to you. I'm technically going to be out of a job at the end of the month unless they renew the contract. So who knows.
Oh,
well, Glenn, I hear they have an opening at HRO for a social media person.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I am the social media type.
Yeah.
I'm the old school, you know, pencil and paper kind of guy.
Right.
Right.
You know, I mean, I saw people taking notes on smartphones, and I'm like, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
I'm definitely not the social media type. It's kind of funny, though. I mean, I've been on this contract for 18-something years, and we go through this every so often, and this year it actually looks like they're not going to renew it. And I'm like, when people find this out, my phone starts ringing, and I've already got about 3 or 4 tentative offers of call me first if you have a problem. Oh. So it's only a question of do I go somewhere. But like Katie, you know, my commute right now is about anywhere from 150 miles each way, you know, 100 miles each way. And I don't know what I would do if I took a job where I only had a 3-mile commute.
Right. So
I don't know if I could handle it. I mean, that's definitely not enough time to turn on the rig and call CQ somewhere. And unlike Katie, I do have 20 meters and 6 meters in the car.
Right.
And, you know, keeps me busy on the trip. But
we have an HF rig in the pickup that when Dwayne was commuting, you know, 70 miles each way, we got that hooked up so he could talk in the truck. But so we got to do a little work on that one, too. So,
well, actually, you're going to see my one of my rig setups in an upcoming issue of QST. They accepted that article here a couple of weeks back. Basically, I took, in both of my cars, I took the 2-meter 440 rig and mounted it in the dash right below the factory radio.
Oh, okay.
Pulled the factory radio out, got a half-size one, and then put the rig underneath it and installed it in the dash, and it looks like it came from the factory that way.
Cool.
So. All right. Hey, guys, before we bring our special guest in tonight,
I thought we were going to talk and keep him out of the picture.
Am I missing anybody? I know Bill said he's in the chat room. Anybody else on video? I don't think so.
No, it's just Alan. We're trying to keep him out of the way. You know, first timer, we don't want him intruding on our turf, you know?
Well, look, let's do this. Let's bring Alan in, say hello to Alan, and welcome him to our group here. Alan, how you doing, man?
Hello.
You need an applause meter.
There you go.
Hey,
happy to be here. So I just kicked myself out of the chat room here, so
did
I'll jump
you?
Back in there in a minute.
Man.
But happy to be here, thanks for asking me to join the crew. So sounds like we'll have some fun here.
All right. Well, you heard your warm welcome there from all of our viewers here in the studio.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, look, hey, you know, I kind of found Alan by accident, I guess. Let me see if I can get me on here with Alan, and maybe I can do a split screen here. Yeah, maybe that'll work. You know, I kind of found Alan by accident. Everybody's been talking about these things. You know, they've been talking about these things, and I'll show it to you in a minute. And it's a little complicated for me, and I think what I'm going to ask Alan in a little while is to give us a little tour of one of them and tell us how to work it. But before we do that, we're so glad to have Alan on. Alan, I guess it's no secret it's in your QRZ site. You work for
Tektronix
right now.
Yep.
Usually when we have a new guest come on, we usually give out, like in your case, maybe in this month we'll give out a new Tektronix scope if you can get one.
You know? We're lucky if I can get one.
Yeah, but tonight we are going to give out a multimeter. This is not a Tektronix, but we're going to give out a multimeter tonight. Hambot's going to come on here in a little while. But, you know, hey, a couple things here about Alan right here. He's an electrical engineer. He's worked as a field RF application engineer for Tektronix. I guess most of your work is up in the northeastern part of the U.S.
Yep. In New England, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, down into central Maryland.
Yeah, since your previous lives included design and applications work focused on analog and mixed signal high-speed RF, hard disk, fiber optic, telecom, and datacom circuits, and their applications. Yeah. Well, man, we are so glad to have you. We put that message out to all of our viewers out there that you were coming in here tonight and going to start with us tonight. And I've had so many people talk about that, hey, you're the man. If you want to learn something, you're the man to teach it right there.
Well, thank you, man. To help out, folks. That's great. I've been with Tektronix 14 years, and as part of this job as an application engineer, I spend a lot of time in front of customers explaining things and trying to make sense of difficult topics and things like that for my customers. So, and it was kind of a side of that is I've always been a hobbyist electronics too. I had a friend of mine who had gotten a hold of an old Tektronix oscilloscope and was asking me about how to use one of the more advanced functions on this old scope, dual delaying time base. And I said, it would probably be easier if I show you. So I wound up taking a video with like my iPhone and stuck it up on YouTube. I said, why don't you just go watch this video that'll show you how to do it. And then I forgot about it. And like a week later, I looked back at that video and it had been viewed like 100 times. I was like, well, I know he didn't view it 100 times, so there must be must be some demand for stuff like this. And that was about 10 years ago when I started the YouTube channel. So, But so I kind of do the same thing. You know, so what I do for work, I kind of produce stuff for my hobby as well. So it's a win-win.
Well, you've got a lot of people out there. I noticed that you had probably about 140,000 or more subscribers to your YouTube channel.
Pretty close. It's 137,000, 138,000 subscribers. I just took a look earlier today. Almost 17 million views.
Wow.
And I went and actually looked at the stats, which is kind of interesting. And I did the lifetime stats of view time. And it was like 1.29 million minutes, which is like 147 years.
Oh, man.
I was like, man, there's a lot of people out there that don't have anything else to do.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, some of the people are repeats, of course. I looked at your video about three times trying to figure out how to work this thing. And I'm going to learn it, but you're going to teach me. And I know on the Nano V&A, you've got a number of different videos that show different aspects of how to use it.
Yeah.
And to get us an overview tonight, I think you're going to show us what.
I'll show you one, and then maybe after that we can go back, and I'll just kind of give everybody a little bit of an orientation for my channel, because there's over 300 videos there now, and in order to make it easy to find things that might interest you, I've got some help on there. But maybe we'll do that after we do the video, because I know there's a lot of folks that are interested in the Nano V&A. And just before I bring this up, I'll mention, I think I put together a presentation, kind of an overall presentation that introduces. Uh-huh. What a vector network analyzer is, and then goes into the Nano V&A. And I've delivered this presentation now to at least four or five different amateur radio groups, including the GQRP convention this past weekend.
Yeah, I saw some comments. I saw some comments from that group.
Yeah. Yes, that was a ton of fun doing that. Yeah. And but it was just since it was in the UK, I had to get up for the introductory session. It was like 5 a.m. here, but at least my talk was the end of the day on Sunday, which happened to be 11 o'clock for me, so that wasn't so bad. Yeah. So what I'll do is let me play the video. I think that is probably one of the more popular ones for the Nano V&A, because it's probably the thing that us as hams would use it for the most.
Okay.
And it just talks about how to use the Nano V&A to check and help with the tuning of an antenna. So basically using it as an antenna analyzer. So what I'll do here is I'm going to share. Let me see if I can go ahead and share my and I'm going to share with sound.
And hey, let me tell the group here, we can't talk during this video because you'll be heard.
Okay. Well, we could talk over.
Oh, no, I was saying at the Glenn and Katie, because a lot of times we queue this up where we can talk in the background, but we're not going to be able to right now.
Okay. Yeah, so this video is number 314 in my videos, and it's one of about five videos I have up on the Nano V&A. But this one is how to use the Nano V&A to sweep and measure an antenna system's SWR and optimize its tuning. So it's about just a six-minute video, so we'll let it play, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. There we go.
In this video, we're going to take a quick look at how to use a Nano V&A, like this Nano V&A H4, to measure an antenna and then help with optimizing its tuning. Now, to measure an antenna, you can use the reflection coefficient or the SWR or the Smith chart. I'm going to choose to use all three. You can see that the yellow trace is already set up to be the log mag of the reflection coefficient, so we'll leave that. The green trace is already a Smith chart, so we'll leave that one alone. So we'll reconfigure the blue trace to be SWR and then get rid of the purple trace. So we bring up the menu, go to display, go to trace, and let's first just get rid of purple trace by touching on it again to get rid of it. And then we'll select trace number one. The inverse text tells us we're selected. We'll go back and then tell it to be on channel zero, which is the reflection channel, or the S11 channel. And now we just have to go back in one more time to the format and hit SWR. Next, let's set up the frequency range we want to test. So we'll bring our menu back up and go back and back again and go to stimulus. In our case, I want to measure the 40-meter amateur radio band from 7 megahertz to 7.3. So I touch on the start frequency, and I dial in 7M for megahertz. That will set up the start frequency, and then we'll go back in and select the stop frequency. 7.3 megahertz. And now we've set up the stimulus range that we want to test. The next thing we want to do is run the calibration, because the default calibration is going to have two coarse of a granularity to measure over this limited frequency range that we have. So we go bring the menu back up, go back and hit Cal, and go to reset the existing calibration. We can see that those calibration indicators have gone away over here. And then we hit Calibrate. And since we're only doing a reflection measurement on channel zero, we only have to do an open, short, and load. So we start off by putting the open on the port and touching open. And next we put a short on the port and touch short. And then we replace the short with a 50 ohm load on the port and touch load. Once we've done all three standards, we can hit done and then choose to save it to a memory location. I'm going to choose just to save it to location one. And so now we hook up the antenna. With the antenna hooked up, we can see our SWR plot over the 40 meter band. We can see the log magnitude of the reflection coefficient, and we can see the Smith chart. And we can use the jog wheel to move our cursor, our marker, to make measurements at various frequencies across the range. Or we even have some marker functions to search for a min or a max. So, for example, if I touch on marker number one, that activates trace number one, and I can go into the marker function and do a search and search for a minimum, and that will put the marker right at the minimum. And I can see that's at 7.216 megahertz. Now, of course, that's all we need to do if all we wanted to do is to sweep the antenna. But if we want to retune it, for example, we can leave these displays up and actually watch the reaction as we adjust the tuning of the antenna. So let's say, for example, I want to retune the resonant point of the antenna to be closer to the middle of the CW portion of the band instead of in the phone portion where it is now. So we can actually just watch the reaction on the VNA as I tune the controls on my antenna tuner. And this is where I find it handy to have the Smith chart shown on the VNA, because you can actually see how the controls on the antenna tuner are going to twist and roll the trace on the Smith chart, and it gives you a little bit better intuitive feel about which way to tune the various controls. Now, the first thing I'm going to do is move my marker down to, somewhere in the CW portion of the band, maybe around 7.07, 7.06, 7.05, something in the neighborhood. So to give me an idea, that's the point that I want to now try to optimize with the tuner. All right, we'll start by moving some of the dials around here. Let's take a look at how the various curves move around. We can see as I turn my inductor up, I can see the Smith chart's kind of turning around in this direction. Okay, and the resonant point is coming down in frequency. So that's kind of going the right way. Okay, and we can actually see I'm bringing my marker on the Smith chart, closer and closer to the center of the Smith chart. So I'm getting kind of close, but it's still kind of missing the mark a little bit, so we're probably going to have to optimize the capacitor here as well. So if we tweak on that a little bit, I can see I'm deepening the null there on the reflection coefficient, and I'm getting pretty close. So you can see with just a little more fine-tuning on the controls of the tuner, I've got myself pretty darn good at my desired point right there. SWR is about 1.02. I'm sitting right at the center of the Smith chart. Reflection coefficient's down around minus 30-something dB. So we successfully retuned this antenna from the phone portion of the band down to the CW portion. Yeah, so give it a try yourself. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed the video. If you like it, give me a thumbs up. We'll be planning on doing a couple of more Nano VNA videos here in the future. Let me know what you'd like to see. And if you haven't subscribed already, please do so. And we'll look for you again next time. Thanks for watching.
Alrighty, so that was the video I think that you watched there, Tom.
Yeah.
And that's kind of representative of some of the videos that I do. I try to make them anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes long, show some real practical, useful information here. I've only got that Nano VNA probably 2 or 3 months ago, and I've used it for a number of different things, and you know, in addition to creating some videos with it. But pretty interesting tool, and so I figured, you know, we could discuss that first before we go and talk a bit more about the YouTube channel, if you'd like.
Yeah. So look, I mean, you got the H4, I guess that's what that was, I believe.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, I have a question. I have a question. Yeah. I think I just I may have lost one of my. I'll find it. I have a question. What is the S21 and the S11 on here? What is that?
What do they mean? Okay, well, that's a good question. So this kind of gets into one of the things that I talk about in this other presentation that I've done the past couple of weeks. And it's terminology that's very common in the vector network analyzer world, but it's just because VNAs were typically only reserved for RF engineers because they're so expensive that most of us hams aren't familiar with it. S11 and S21 are what are called S parameters, and the S stands for scattering. I know that doesn't help you either, okay? But what it really means, it's a the S parameters, as you know, Tom's pointing out there, essentially refer to the transmission and reflection properties. And the way to think of it, like the S just stands for scattering. The following two numbers refer to port numbers on the VNA. So on the nano VNA, channel 0 is port 1, and channel 1 is port 2. Almost all the VNAs in the world is just called port 1 and port 2. Unfortunately, the nano VNA calls it channel 0 and channel 1. Mm-hmm. So just think of this. You could even rename yours port 1 and port 2 on the nano VNA. So what the numbers refer to, S is basically just the S parameter, and it's the response of a channel or the response given by a channel in response from a stimulus from another channel. So the way to think about it, like S21 is the response measured on port 2 in response to a stimulus applied by port 1. So that's S21. So you can think of it as saying, if I make a measurement on port number 2, let's say I'm measuring a filter. Let's say I put an IF filter or something in between here, and I measure the response out of that filter on port 2 in response to a swept stimulus that's coming out of port 1. That's called S21. So it's just a ratio, okay, of the measurement on port 2 compared to the stimulus applied on port 1. So that's a transmission measurement. Like I can measure the loss of coax. I can measure the frequency response of a filter. So that's a two-port measurement, okay? S11 is the measurement seen on port 1 in response to a signal applied from port 1. So that's a reflection measurement. So it's like just what we did when we looked at an antenna. We're applying a signal out of port number 1, and that's going into the antenna, okay? And then if the antenna is not matched or you don't have a matched antenna system, you're going to get some SWR, so you get some reflected power. That reflected power comes back into that port. So S11 is the measurement of the response coming back into port 1 as a result of the signal being supplied by port 1. Okay, so S11 is essentially a reflection measurement. S21 is a transmission measurement. Okay, in VNA parlance, it's the reflection coefficient. S11 is the reflection coefficient. S21 is the transmission coefficient. Okay, but that's where the numbers come from. That's traditional terminology in the VNA world. Okay, that makes sense.
If you say so, I will probably not really focus on those two areas a whole lot.
Actually, I know what I can do here, and I could bring up one slide from that presentation that I was mentioning.
Yeah.
Let me just do that. Let me minimize this. And move this over so I can see where I'm getting at. And I'm going to do another share here in a second.
I think I need to start with the basics, you know, maybe look at the SWR, the dip, you know.
And that's okay. And that's all you want to use it for. That's all you really need to do. But let's do this. Let me go and – what's playing in the background here? Hold on a minute here. I hear some – see, who's playing? Am I not? That's not me, is it? Let me see.
You know, I heard every word he was saying on that description, and I'm still convinced that he was speaking Greek.
Sounds like you have the show playing from earlier.
Wow. It's not me, though. Somebody's got the show playing from earlier, because I don't think it's coming from me.
Not me. I'm not playing anything.
Yeah. I don't have it on.
I don't either.
Tom, are you watching yourself on video again?
No. It's not right, here.
We'll wait till Tom clears that off.
It's not here. Yeah.
All right. Let me do this. I can close my browser, I guess. In this case, I guess it was me coming from somewhere. Sorry about that. all right. So let's do this. Let's share this presentation here, and I'm going to turn this sound off. You don't need any sound on this. And this is actually a presentation that I've given, but I've got a slide in here that talks about those S parameters. Okay. And let me get to that slide and bring that up. So here's a quick little S parameters. Again, it's the ratio of a measured response to a stimulus. So it's the response on port number, so port 1 or 2, from the stimulus applied to from this port here. So let's say I've got the VNA up here. I've got a signal being applied from port 1. We call that our reference signal. And then some signal might be reflecting back. Okay. So the ratio of A over R is essentially S11. It's the reflection from the DUT port. And then if we inject a signal here, like into a filter or into a piece of coax, and we measure out the other end, that's going to be, we'll call that B. The measured response there is called B. So the ratio of B over the reference is our transmission, that's going through the device. So that's what those S parameters are. And inside the nano VNA, since we're talking about that, I'll go backwards through my presentation here. Let's look at this one. This is what a real basic block diagram of what's inside that VNA. Okay, we've got an RF source that is sending a signal out port number 1 into the device, whatever we're testing, could be an antenna, could be whatever. And then we could measure a response at the other end, or we could measure a reflection. So we've got inside the VNA are usually either directional couplers or bridges to pick off or separate out a piece of the forward signal that we're sending out, measured in the R reference receiver, and then also pick off a piece of the signal that's being reflected back, and that's the A receiver here, okay, with this directional coupler, all right? And then if we're measuring something through, we've got another receiver here. So there are three effectively receivers inside of the VNA that are measuring what we're applying, what's being reflected back, and what's being transmitted through our DUT. And then there's a little bit of an engine in there that takes all these results and does the math to create the, reflection coefficient trace or the SWR trace or the Smith chart or whatever it might be. Okay. So the transmission measurements are things like gain and loss. That's also, S21 is the transmission coefficient, insertion phase or delay. And then the reflection measurements are things like VSWR, reflection coefficient, or S11, return loss, even input impedance, and things like that.
So
that's
Alan,
what happens
Alan,
inside of a VNA.
Yeah, Alan, I'm kind of old school. I've had my license 57 years.
Yep.
So I just noticed in the chat room, if you take the extra test today, they're saying there are questions on the extra test about S11 and S21. So I guess you got to know all this stuff now.
Well, just at least to know what the definition is, I think is probably all you really need to know. Just that that S11 is the reflection coefficient, S21 is the transmission coefficient, S11 is a measure of the reflection coming off of a port of a device, where S21 is the measure of the transmission properties, like insertion gain or loss of a device.
So is this a case here, in some of our future balloon flights, I know Bill Brown's in here. He has in the past run a Class E amplifier to get that 10 milliwatts up a little bit on his tracker. So I've been experimenting and playing with that. So could I use this VNA to actually tune a low-pass filter for 20 meters to have as the output on my, a 2N7002 MOSFET?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. To measure, like if you're going to put a passive low pass filter on the output, absolutely. In fact, one of the other videos that's on my channel here, in fact, I'm going to pull that. I'm not sharing it right now, but I'll pull it up here so that we have it. One of the other videos on my channel is showing how to use the nano-VNA to measure the passband characteristics of a filter. And the example that I used in the video was for a low-pass filter that I built or I put together for a little QRP CW transmitter called that use a color burst crystal, 3.5 megahertz. And the transmitter is a single transistor transmitter, so it's just full of distortion. So I built a low-pass filter to follow it to get rid of the second and third and fifth harmonics that were coming out of this thing so that I could put it on the air without splattering on, you know, five different bands.
All right. So what band was that on?
It was on 80 meters, 80 meters CW, 3.57 megahertz. Okay. So.
Well, we're running on 20 meters right now, so I might have to look at that.
Yeah, so that's video number. Let me take a quick look here on my videos, and so to measure a low pass filter, video number 315 is the one that
right.
To measure a low pass.
Well, look,
filter.
Hey, people are asking in the chat room where can they get a copy of that presentation? Do you have it up anywhere?
It's not up anywhere yet. It's one of those things that's still a little bit of a work in progress. Uh-huh. Each time I deliver it, I change it a little bit. But anybody who's interested, certainly send me an email, and I could send you a PDF of the current state of it, you know, type of thing. Of course, if you belong to a radio club and you want to, if you're doing remote meetings like most people are, and we want to do a presentation, we can do that too. I mean, part of being the technical coordinator for the Northern New Jersey section of the ARL field organization is I give a lot of technical presentations, so I'd be happy to do that, schedule permitting. Just respect the fact that I'm still working and my day job does take up some time, so that was a little tricky when I was working with some of the clubs in the UK to put some of these presentations together. So,
all right, well, great. Great segment. We're looking forward to more like this. We're going to learn a lot from you, and I'm going to drill down with you and figure out how to make my 20 meter low pass filter.
Yeah, let's give a 5 minute tutorial on navigating the YouTube channel, because that way people can self discover some of the stuff if you don't mind. Let's go share my screen one more time here, and I'm going to share the my YouTube page. And it's just youtube.com/mycallsign is really all you need. So youtube.com/W2AEW. You don't have to have the user in there. Just youtube.com/W2AEW gets to this page. And there you can see there's 134,000 subscribers or so. And if you hit home, that'll kind of bring you to – this is kind of the page that you see. And one of the things that I'll mention is that, you know, because I've got all the videos numbered – sequentially here. So number 318 was the one that I just put out a day or two ago it was a little promo for kind of being on your show here. But most of the other videos are technical. And I would say the content is a mix between ham radio topics or things that might be interested to hams, as well as basic electronics and test and measurement and some troubleshooting and repair. So it's just a lot of electronics geeky type stuff. But because there are so many videos, one of my viewers from years and years ago, Dino KL0S, who's also may have seen things he's written for QST and things like that, he actually took the time when I had a little over 100 videos to put together an index file for me, which was fantastic. And so I said, hey, look, this is great. Thank you for doing this. I'll take it from here. So I've been maintaining that index every time. So where you find that is if you look at the banner graphic along the top here and go all the way down here to the lower right corner, you see it says video index file PDF or video index PDF file. And if I bring that up, I'm going to load that up in a new page. It's a PDF file. You can download if you want, or you can just view it online. And every video, the first part of the index file is just every video listed sequentially, and every one of these is a hyperlink. So you could just use in your Adobe or PDF viewer, just you could do a search for keywords and find a video. But if you scroll down through this, go through the sequential list, now you'll have videos listed kind of by topic. And here I've got a topic on oscilloscopes, and there's a bunch of videos on scopes. And then maybe some subtopics on like analog video and some specialized scopes. Then I've got a whole topic on spectrum analyzers and other test equipment. test procedures, circuit construction, some circuit theory, some videos on basic circuit theory, on differential amps and diodes and pin diodes and things like that, circuit analysis, ham radio operation. And I've got a couple of things like Arduino. So, Glenn, you can go keep me honest on this stuff here. I'm certainly not an expert on that stuff. Some stuff on software-defined radio and some radio-specific topics, some repairs that I've done on certain radios, and then just some miscellaneous videos. So you should be able to find what you're looking for with that index file. Mm-hmm. If not, just right within YouTube, don't use the search at the very top, but use this little magnifier down here to search for videos. And, of course, you can just click on videos, and all the videos will be sorted by date or whatever, and you can just go through and try to find what you might be interested in here. I also have some playlists that I've put together. So I've got my playlist for the Nano VNA is just 6 videos right now. So if you're just interested in that, you can look at that. If you're just interested in Smith charts, that's a new topic for you. I've got 4 videos just on Smith charts. So I've got a couple of playlists that are, like circuit tutorials and scope tutorials and, some other things like that. So lots of ways of helping you find what you might be interested in. But, please go through it. If you don't find something you're looking for, shoot me an email, let me know, and I may be able to add that topic to a list of future videos.
All right. That email is w2aew@arrl.net.
That's right.
All right. Well, very good, man. Hey, I enjoyed that segment so much, man.
Yeah, I guess we're calling it Tech Tips, right?
Yeah, I guess unless we come up with another name, we kind of rushed into that,
Yeah.
But yes. I wanted to throw something out there to get us started. And again,
sure.
Hey, if anybody has another idea for a better name for Alan's segment, we're calling it Tech Tips. But if you have a better name, shoot us an email and let us know. Or put it in the chat room tonight. We're watching.
That was great.
Yeah.
That listing for all of the videos, that is super helpful, especially having as many as you do now. But if somebody's searching for a particular topic, that was really well done.
Thank you. I try to make the titles have enough of the keywords that you might be looking for so that if you do a search in the index file, you'll get a hit, on something that you might be looking for. So.
Well.
Right.
My site would look like if I had an administrative assistant, but I don't have one. I don't know how you do it.
The tough thing was I had about 150 videos before I started to number them. So I had to go through all the previous videos and number them sequentially and then redo everything. But that took a couple of days, just sitting in the evening watching TV going through number.
Wow,
3,
man.
32, 33, 34.
All right. Well, everybody, stand by a second, and we'll be back here in just a minute.
Let's talk about a brand new ICOM radio. Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion, as you have base station features and functionality at the tip of your fingers in a portable package. It covers HF through 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at just over 2 pounds with RF direct sampling for most of the HF bands and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. It also has a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen with live band scope and waterfall. You get 5 watts with the BP272 and 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC power supply. It has a micro USB connector, Bluetooth, and WLAN. Integrated GPS with antenna and a GPS logger. It has a micro SD card slot. And the HM243 speaker microphone comes standard. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 backpack. It has a special compartment for your IC705 and a room for all your accessories. The IC705 now has received FCC certification, and we expect product to be shipping to dealers by the end of September. Visit www.icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios.
LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art antenna tuners for every amateur need. From QRP to QRO, fixed stations, portable and remote, an LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using our lightning-fast, proprietary tuning algorithms. LDG is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. All LDG products carry a full 2-year warranty that is fully transferable. Support is only a phone call or email away. We're always here to help you. Visit us on the web at ldgelectronics.com.
Okay, we're back. We're back. And
look at that. We look at Glenn.
Oh, yeah. Let me see if I can get the camera on me here. No, let's leave the camera on our remote.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There's the boss.
There we go. There we go. Hey, guys, this is why we're getting Hambot ready. Hey, I got a few cards this week. Look, W-A-K-O-U, Ohio. I got a card from Ohio today.
Nice.
K-N-4-V-G-Y. I think I got this a few weeks ago. This was the rookie roundup right there. Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yeah, the virtual
there
background.
There you go.
Cards.
There you go. That's what he sent me. An invisible card, guys. Look at that.
That's pretty cool.
That is KN4BGY. KN4TRT down in Tallahassee. Look at that. Nice card from Tallahassee.
Oh, I like that one.
Ooh, pretty.
And then we got one from W6TIR out in High Grove, California. All right, so we're going to do Hambot, and I couldn't give away a Tektronix scope tonight. Our budget this month would not let us do that. So what we're going to do, we're going to give away the seven function digital multimeter. This thing, with this, you can get accurate readings for, I don't know how accurate, but you can get accurate readings for DC voltage, DC current, AC voltage, resistance. Oh, and what else will it do? Transistors, batteries. Boy, this thing will do everything.
Those are actually very versatile.
They are. And, you know, it's a very inexpensive multimeter, but I want to tell you something. This is a good meter to throw in your toolbox in your truck or throw in your trunk. I mean, you know, if you break it, just throw it away and come back to the show and we'll try to give you another one. So let's get Hambot ready here. Hambot's going to pick somebody from the room in the chat room. Try not to talk too much, or actually don't talk in the chat room when we're waiting for the winner to select. But here's Hambot. All right, so Hambot is ready to go there. He's going to pick somebody. You've got just about a minute or so, I don't know, to collect. I don't know what Hambot now, if he gives you 30 seconds or a minute, it's been so long. But when Hambot says the time's up. You can't argue. People used to argue with me. You know, I came in right at the end. Well, you can't argue with Hambot, whatever he says. All right, so Hambot, okay. Hambot's coming on right now. So we're going to see what happens here. Some lucky person.
With my luck, it'll be me, and I've got about five of them.
Some lucky. Well, then we'll just give it away again, then.
Oh.
Digital multimeter right here, guys. KA2OFM. Bill, are you here to claim it? Cambot's asking if you're here. Let's see.
Bill was here earlier.
Bill's okay, Hambot saying you got 45 seconds left, Bill. Is that Bill? Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, don't go by my voice on audio because the video is delayed by about 30 seconds here. Go by what's in the chat room. Hambot's the official keeper.
Did Bill go? Maybe he went to get a cup of coffee.
That'd be my luck.
You can make this an 8 function. You can put a little diode on there and make it a field strength meter. All right. 10 seconds.
Well,
10 seconds. Looks like. I don't know if Bill's going to get it or not.
Maybe he already has one and doesn't want one.
Well, I don't know.
Like I say, I've got one in each of my cars, and I love them.
Okay, look at here. Nope. Okay, Hambot picked another name here. John, are you here?
Right, and then John says, LOL.
Who was that? KC7DRI, John. Oh, he won it.
Yeah.
So John won it. Okay, well, hey, Hambot's moving along faster than I was tonight.
I didn't know that was fast.
I didn't know he'd picked another one. Okay, John, so K7... No, KC7DIR. You won the 7-function digital meter. If you look right there in the display, you'll see it's nothing inside this meter case.
No, it works on smoke and mirrors.
See, there you go. If you look in there, you'll notice there's nothing in there. But anyway, we'll make sure that the one you get does have something
the
here.
For the numbers.
So we'll send it out to you, John. Congratulations for winning this. We'll send it out in the mail tomorrow. All right. Boy, that was exciting.
Hey.
You know, we need to get Hambot to give something away every show.
Well, we need Hamfest to come back and you to give out a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, you know, we hadn't had a Hamfest in a while, so you know, I'm thinking out of $10,000 in prizes that we give out each year during Hamfest, and since there aren't any this year, I'm thinking we ought to be able to arrange some and give them out on a show every week. We'll work on that. We'll start with
that. Be an A's are only you know, $60. So
yeah, we'll start with Glenn to see what he wants to donate.
Oh, I got your donation right here.
What do you got there?
He's grabbing the closest cat, I think.
The cat?
Probably so, yeah.
You are not giving away a monster.
The only problem, you have to come up with the food.
Right.
That thing looks like it might eat 100 pounds a week, man. No way. All right, so, you know, tonight we talked a lot about the Nano VNA. Now, Alan, there's a lot of different ones out there. This is an H4. There's all different models. Are they all basically the same?
That's a good question. The Nano VNA, unlike like a Rig Expert antenna analyzer or an MFJ analyzer, there's no one manufacturer. The whole project started about 4 years ago. Somebody had put together a project on like a public like GitHub or something like that, and some people picked up on it and. Was one guy, and I forget his name, some username is like EDY something or other, said, made an open source project out of this thing and arranged with a Chinese manufacturer to build it and started selling them. And then because it's an open source thing, the design files, everything like that is all public domain, it started getting cloned all over the place. And then they were kind of all over. So there were two or three different folks that picked up on it and actually started really in trying to make improvements on the design as opposed to just trying to make a buck. And the Nano VNAs that have a dash H and the dash H4, like the one you have and the one I have here, which is the H4, doesn't say it on here, but it says so on the back. A guy named Hugen, or at least his username is Hugen, is the one who took the design. He actually did some proper shielding inside of it and makes it. So the original Nano VNA had a very small 2.8-inch screen. It's a little smaller than a credit card and a little bit tougher to use. The H was the same way. The H4 has got a 4-inch screen, and that's a lot easier to use. So that's why I went with the H4 because it's one that is, you know, it was kind of supporting the guys who did some of the work to improve this thing. And I bought mine from R&L Electronics because I know that they – take some care in terms of where they source these from, you know, from the overseas, and they make sure they get ones that are built to the right right to the right specs or using proper shields and things like that. So I got it from them because I know they're sourcing it from the right place.
So now that can also be hooked to your computer. Do you have to download some special software somewhere to see the displays?
Yeah, if you go to nanovna.com, the website, there's a place where you can download some software, and there's a USB port right there that you can plug it in. This is where you charge the unit up, but it's also where you connect up to the PC to use some external software. The external software actually solves a lot of problems, and obviously it doesn't have all the displays and traces all overlaid on top of each other like you have on the unit. Mm-hmm. It separates them out into a grid, so that's handy. It also gets away from that 101 point per sweep limitation, so you can get more points in there. So if you're trying to sweep a multiband antenna, you really can't do that with 101 points because the frequency space in between the points is too coarse to really see where the nulls are. Yeah. So using the external software, you can put more points in there and get a finer resolution trace versus frequency. The downside is that you're tethered to a PC, right? So you get rid of the portable aspect of it. So the H's are nice. There's also another 4-inch version that is just the Nano VNA-F. And it was a guy who took the design early on, made a couple of other improvements to it. So it's a little bit different hardware-wise from the H versions. And it's a little more expensive, but he puts it in a metal case instead of a plastic case. So that might be worth it for somebody who decides, I'm willing to pay $120 for it, which is what that one costs, in order to get a metal case. And he made some other improvements to the firmware and stuff. Yeah. So that's kind of the H4 to me is probably the best bargain right now. It's still $60.
Yeah.
And then there's a newer one coming out that actually goes to 3 gigahertz. The H4 that we've got goes to 1.5 gig. The new one, which is called, unfortunately, SAA2. Okay, that's the name of it. Okay. Some people are referring to it as the version 2 or V2. And that one goes to 3 gigahertz and has even better improved performance. The only problem with that one is that right now it's easy to find that, but it's only, again, in that 2.8-inch display.
So a question, the Mini 1300, is it related some way to the Nano?
No. No, the Mini 1300 and some of the other, like the SDR kits, VNA, and there's one from Array Solutions. These are all other small, inexpensive VNAs. None of them are as inexpensive as the Nano VNA, but most of them have got a little bit better performance than the Nano VNA. Right? The Nano VNA, you're getting what you pay for. You're getting a lot more than what you pay for. But
this is all that comes with it. Basically, it's the menu, they have a picture here of all the lines on it right here, and you got the menu, and that is all the instructions that comes with it. So that's why it's important to watch Alan's videos.
Yeah, there's a user manual online that was translated from other languages. So the best way to learn how to use it is to find a video that shows how to use it to do the particular job. So the first couple of videos I did, I tried to just do the things that you would do most often. Sweep an antenna, sweep a filter, determine the length of a piece of coax. Those are the three most common ones, things that are ham are going to use the instrument for. And it may be, if you're going to do like impedance matching networks for, a filter or something like that or an antenna, you can do that with it as well. But those are the things that I tried to do first.
So
because
just
that's
one,
where you don't really have the instructions.
Just one last question. We've got millions of questions. I connected it to an antenna switch here. And I'm just wondering, that antenna switch probably is going to show some blip in here somewhere. And in my coax, I've got some LMR-400, runs about 130 feet. And then I got a grounding bar and a ground system out there. It goes through, some barrel connectors and into the antenna. So am I going to see on the display that grounding point and maybe my switch?
If you do like that TDR measurement, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's going to depend, and I'll tell you why. Because number one is a limited measurement dynamic range that you're going to have. So it really depends on how much of an impedance discontinuity those little things give you. Okay, if they don't result in too much of a discontinuity, you may not really see them.
Yeah.
But the other thing that could affect it is if you're still hooked up to an antenna, especially a low band antenna, if that antenna is receiving a strong signal, that might be detected. And look like a discontinuity. So you might want the trace. You might have to let it run a couple of times to see what peaks are consistent and are always there versus ones that are popping up and down, which might be signals that are actually being received.
Okay, cool. Let's see. Katie, you had mentioned that you and Dwayne were working on something. Are you guys going to have something to show us here soon?
Maybe. We've got a couple of rig runners that we're going to set up on each side of the shack to manage all the power.
Now, what's the rig runner do? What is that?
Hold on, I'll grab it. I'll show it to you.
Okay.
Grab it. Hold on. I got to put my ears back in. Hold on a second. And maybe if he's watching, he left the shack. Maybe if he's watching upstairs, I'll come back down.
Yeah.
So, all right. This one, it's from West Mountain Radio.
Yep.
Sorry about the lights. And this one we bought, you can buy just the post, or we got the whole kit. So it comes with the cables and the power pole connectors that you need. And let me open this bad boy up here.
So is this some type of power management?
Yes.
I'm not sure what it is.
It's it has your power pole. Yeah, it's for proper DC distribution.
Yes, okay, so just power distribution, I guess. You can plug multiple things into it.
Yeah, yeah. We've got stuff all over the place here in the shack, so this is going to simplify it. And Mike down at Denver HRO so this is what we'll have. And what's really nice is this is so you can set it up horizontally and you can get into the...
it's no good now.
Well, not with that one.
And it's very rugged.
It's very rugged,
but you can get into the power poles really nice because they're down here. And like some of the other versions where it's up here, you're kind of looping around and what have of these.
And each circuit is fused. You can put different size fuses in.
Yeah, and there's different, like this one's, we've got 8 on this one, but you can buy smaller ones. There's also one, I think upwards of 12.
Uh-huh.
So this is the 4008H. So it's pretty cool. So we're going to put one here on this side of the shack to manage everything on this side, and then one on that side of the shack to manage everything over there. And now that Dwayne's home for a couple more weeks, we'll do that.
Well, I posted a link in the chat to a video that I did that shows how to properly crimp the power pole connectors.
Yeah, we bought the
PowerWorks crimp kit.
Yes.
Tri-crimp with this.
Yes, the right tool for the job, absolutely. Yes.
And I don't have the right tool, so I solder mine.
No. You must have the right tool.
Yeah.
I live by power pole.
All right.
Yeah, I'm excited because this is going to be something new for me to learn. So Dwayne's going to be kind of teaching me as I go. But it seemed to me like it made more sense. I mean, we could have bought all of the extra wire that we needed, but this particular kit came with all of it. So, mm-hmm. But if you just need the box, and you don't need all of the extra stuff, it's actually pretty reasonably priced, I thought.
Yeah, I use one on my shack just for the things that are on the rack with all my radios. I've got a smaller mm-hmm. version of what you have there.
Right.
And I'm starting to use the power pole more and more. That was not a standard that I used. In fact, I didn't even have a standard, for a while. And, it's cool to be able to plug stuff in.
Frank,
plug
it. I like them.
I just saw in the chat room, Frank says, I'll take the dented one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, for any of my projects, I need a 2-pin connector, 3-pin connector, 8-pin connector. I'll power pole it up and do it that way. What it's going to do is talk about this. This is my new little, my latest project. That's one of those Peltier coolers.
Oh, yeah.
And I have found, gotta love the internet, that little itty-bitty thing is an infrared temperature sensor, accurate to then plus or minus half a degree centigrade.
Oh, cool.
All right. So hey, you're working, you're playing with the, what do you call it, Peltier?
Peltier, I guess. It's
Peltier,
French.
Peltier,
yeah.
It's device here. Now, Glenn, on our balloon launches, we can't make a LiPo battery work over about 25,000 feet. And if we put one of those Peltier devices on there, we might be able to warm it up.
Well, yeah,
you need a lot of power.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, if you've got 5 amps, we could easily heat that thing up.
Well,
you'd be able to heat it up for about 2 minutes before you kill your
Yeah, your supercapacitor ain't going to cut it.
Okay, well,
you know what?
Then that's out then. We'll just fly low. Alan, in our endeavor to try to find a battery that worked, we did find a nuclear fusion battery that you can actually buy. And,
this is the one that supposedly self-charges?
It says it doesn't require a charge for 22 years. It's out there, a company down in and Florida sells it. It's like a little 16-pin dip type size.
But it's made from spent nuclear fuel.
But it cost around $1,000 to $2,000, and it didn't give us quite enough current to run our system that we need, so we probably won't use it. All right.
I saw
look,
a video or two debunking that thing. So.
Hey, I'll tell you what I'm going to do right now, and this was not the plan, but I'm going to do it. And, Katie, I know sometimes you need to drop off early, or if you're okay, stick with us. If you need to go, it's perfectly all right. Would love to have you.
I'm out of here. No. I got a job to get up and leave the house.
I know
for
you
the
do.
Morning.
I know you do.
I can't show up in my T-shirt and shorts anymore. All right, I'll say see you. I know. So, bye, everybody, and welcome, Alan. So great to have you on the show.
And
barring any unforeseen circumstances, I'll see you next week.
All right, very good. I'm going to open the phone lines up.
All right, see ya.
Better take care.
Let's see. I'm going to open the phone lines up. Let me see if I can bring a phone line number up here. Let's see. That might do it there. I just got too many things going. There we go. So the phone line, we'll open it up tonight. If anybody wants to say hello to Alan, give us a call at 712-775-7270. We have phone numbers, local phone numbers in about 65 countries. So give us a call and say hello. We'd love to hear from you.
I wonder how many people are listening on WBCQ. I used to listen to the show on WBCQ sometimes, so it's always fun.
You could hear this show on there?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, it was like a propagation. And it's funny because it was a good 10 or 15-second delay.
I'm trying to get Alan up there to put us on the 9330 transmitter. That's the new one they just built. I don't know if you saw it, 500,000 watts, and it has the largest rotatable shortwave antenna, I think, in the world. I don't know if you've seen pictures of that or not, but he came on the show one night running low power, 100 watts, and we had people from Australia calling in. They were listening to it down there.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, okay, let's see. The phone lines are open here. Give us a call. Well, it's been an interesting night, and I've really enjoyed talking about the Nano, and maybe next week Alan, we can either expand on that or maybe even a different subject, even a different subject.
Pick one from one of the videos, pick another video to talk about that might be interesting. So you can certainly look through the inventory of things there to see what's interesting to you. I'd love to make it kind of a bit more interactive, too, if people have got questions about things and go through that. So,
all right, so let me see.
This halo over my headband here.
What are you seeing back here?
I got the virtual background on here, and I get kind of this halo underneath my headband from my thing here. So.
At some point, I all right, guys, the virtual background.
We are waiting on a call. Let's see. Oh yeah. If you guys don't like that music, you need to call in right now so the music will stop. That's terrible. I'll try to watch. Yep, we got a call. Well, we had a call.
Right. I do wish they'd give you an option for different music.
Don't know where he went. Somebody called in, and then they hung up on me. All right.
That is one thing, Alan. Talking about things like the oscilloscopes and the V&A, back in the day, that was like a right arm to us.
The V&A was even up until, just a few years ago, the V&A was just untouchable by, anybody who wasn't a professional. Scopes, you could always kind of find something used, but you never found a V&A. And it wasn't until we started to see some things like even like the Rig Expert, it was more of a single port VNA, like the Rig Expert antenna analyzers, anything that could start measuring phase and look at Smith charts and stuff. But it wasn't until this nano VNA that just dropped the price point to something that, you know, costs less than going out to dinner, you know.
But what I was referring to really was, you know, people don't know how to use that old test equipment, you know, like a scope. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my go-to tool here.
Yeah.
And people today, they're like, what do you use that thing for? Because they just haven't had exposure to it. So,
yeah.
You know, all right, we've got a couple people in here. Let's see on the phone line.
N5WXD.
Okay, who we got?
N5? Yeah.
N5WXD. I'm Janet.
Wait a minute. Wait, the N5 go first?
Yeah.
N5WXD, John.
WXZ, John. Hey, John. We got a little confusion here. And we got another person on here that was doubling with you, if you can double on a telephone. Who was the other person?
Janet, 80MU.
80MU, and your name again?
Janet. J-A-N-E-T.
Okay. Janet. Okay, Janet. Hey, I got you guys. Okay. Well, hey, John. Hey, John was one of the only two people that checked in the 40-meter net tonight. I could only hear Texas. How you doing, John?
I'm doing good. I want to say that I was one of the USB2 who figured out to do upper sideband.
Oh, yeah. You know, somebody, some Canadian in one of the Facebook groups, I told you this today, I'll tell this to our viewers, they think it's too much trouble to use, you know, USB on 80 and 40 and then, you know, LSB on the other. So they're wanting us to change the standard to LSB everywhere. I guess it's too much trouble, although my radio kind of does it automatically. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm actually curious why they did do it that way.
Well, a lot of it came down to the way the equipment that was available. A lot of the equipment that was used by hams was repurposed military equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And with a 9 megahertz IF that was typically common in those instruments, it came down to the mixing structure that you would invert the spectrum when you down-converted. You didn't invert the spectrum when you up-converted into the IF. It was as simple as that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't think about the 9 meg.
Yep.
So, John, did the band get any better today after we got off?
Well, you know, shortly after the net ended, when you called it, the guy that was doing lower sideband on the frequency disappeared, and I thought, oh, my gosh, we missed it by that much. Kind of a backfall.
What frequency were you on?
70-180.
You were, because I had a really strong signal from Georgia coming in on 7180.
Yeah.
And so I was listening on lower side. Yeah. I didn't think to listen on upper side to see if you were there.
Nobody does upper side band on 40 meters.
Yeah, because everybody yells at you.
Well, we did.
All right.
We did? Were we on lower or upper? We were on upper.
We were on upper.
Yeah.
Glenn, there are people that do both side bands if they're running AM.
Well, I remember, you know, back in the day before sideband was really popular, about the only way you could do it was with double sideband and suppress the carrier.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's pick up real quick, Janet, on here. 80MU. Janet, you there?
Yep.
How you doing? And where are you?
I'm doing just fine. I'm in Kansas.
Kansas.
Lawrence. Home of the University of, and with sports teams named after America's premier domestic terrorist group, the Jayhawkers.
Okay.
From back in the 1850s.
All right. Well.
But I was basically calling to ask Alan, what kind of guitar pick is that? There are several different kinds of material for guitar picks. I've always used nitrocellulose on my guitar, but there are several others.
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know the answer. The Nano VNA, when I purchased it, came with this little tether and the pick with a hole drilled in it already.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't pick it, but it's kind of a translucent gray material, but it makes a really nice stylus to use with the Nano VNA. But a guitar pick is really
mine came with a stylus.
Unfortunately, this is what they sent it with. So
mine came with a stylus. I guess they just spill anything they have in here.
Okay, yeah, this is the one that I bought mine from R&L, and that's what it came with then. But it could be, you know, maybe shipping it with other things as well. So, but good question, Janet. I don't know, but they would all work equally well because it's just a pressure-sensitive touchscreen. It's not a capacitive sensor, so it'll work with anything that.
Okay. But in which case, I'll just snatch one out of my guitar case.
There you go.
Yeah, probably just anything.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I saw that and thought, guitar pick, that's a cool way to do it.
Yeah, it wasn't my idea. It just I saw it when I pulled out of the box. That is a cool idea.
Well, I thought that was your idea that you invented that system, because I got just a stylus with mine. Yeah.
Yeah, the nice thing about it with the tether there, you don't lose it. It's always kind of attached to it. So.
Yeah. That's a cool idea. Whoever thought that up was thinking.
Yep.
Okay, so our friend Bruce in the chat room says the guitar pick is actually also used to tune the antenna. You pluck the wire to find a resonant point. I guess it has to be stretched pretty tight. I don't think you can do it on my antennas. Yeah.
How do you do that with a beam?
I don't know.
Norms.
I don't know. All right. Well, guys, we hope to get another balloon off soon. We're going to wait about 3 weeks. We're trying to wait till October, getting a little weather behind us, getting some of the weather systems behind us. Lately, the jet streams have been taking us in circles and everything, and we didn't like that. So we're going to wait a few weeks where we have due east winds at 100 miles an hour, and we're going to fly, and we hope to get around the world in about 5 days instead of 17. And no more detours up into the Arctic. We don't want to do that.
Yeah, that one that you flew that went around like 3.5 times, was that the longest flight that you had?
Yeah, that was the longest one. All of our others didn't make it, not even one. That was our ninth attempt. I tell everybody that if you try 10 times, you'll make it. And I was getting very confident on the ninth trip because I knew I only had one more to go. So we crashed all the others in Spain and China and Japan and the ocean and Poland. In fact, we had one recovered in Poland. The Polish team went out and got it for us.
I thought the most amazing thing, though, with all three loops around, every loop went through Morocco.
Pretty much.
Look at all those lines; they all cross in Morocco, and that's the only place all three of them cross in the same spot. So I wonder if they went to what's the name of the bar in Casablanca? Maybe they all went.
I don't know, but it seems like all of them head for the Straits of Gibraltar. They kind of go through that little. Some of them go right through there, don't they, Bill?
They go through that area almost all the time, and then the other place they fly across is Japan.
Yeah.
They all fly across a certain area of China and Japan. I was going to mention that KI-6RC-12 has been flying for well over a week now, I think about 8 days. He was launched from Los Angeles, went down to Mexico, went up to Oregon, came back to Mexico, came back to Los Angeles, flew to Northern California, turned around and flew to Southern California.
Yeah, so I've been watching that one. He's just making a big loop.
Going in circles around California.
Yeah, so, I don't like doing that.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I prefer not to do that. So we're going to wait a while. Bill, you think if we wait until October, we'll have a little bit different patterns out there?
Oh, yeah, towards the end of September and beginning of October, it'll really start getting good. Just have to kind of avoid the peak of the hurricane season, though. which is right about now, yeah, the next week or so. But well, towards the end of the month, October is a really fine time to start getting some good winds. November in particular.
Yeah. It's really already have our next flight picked out. You know, this next one we're gonna go for long duration. Hopefully we'll launch about October. We hope we stay up a long time. But when it comes down, we've already got the next one planned and ready to go. And what we want to do there, Bill, is I want to launch two balloons at the same time. One will be W5KUB, and one will be, we'll use my son, AC5CM. We're going to launch both of them together here. I may launch, one of them may be a 36-inch clear round, and the other one may be maybe two of the silver, what is it, Qualitex or whatever? Is that what they are, Qualitex? So we're going to launch both those at the same time and see how long they'll stay together. And I have no idea. They'll probably fly at very similar altitudes, I'm guessing.
We launched four at the same time, and after 2 days, they were only about 10 miles apart.
Yeah. Well, I thought if somebody told me that it was impossible that they'd fly together, I was going to take a piece of thread. I was going to take like a 30-foot piece of thread, and I was going to tie the two balloons together when we let them go, and it'd be 30 foot apart. Now, the only thing is, if one of them tried to come down, it would probably, that thread would bring the other one down, wouldn't it?
You get up in the jet stream running 120 miles an hour, I wonder if that thread would hold up.
Yeah, so we're going to try that, Bill. We're going to try to run two of them. Either he'll be my wingman or I'll be his wingman when we launch. But then it might turn into a race, because if they get really separated, we'll probably get into a race. And, it's likely that one of them might make it around the world, one of the two. Even if the less expensive balloon. The what?
Boards in the other day.
What was that, Glenn?
You got a whole bag of boards in the other day.
Yeah, I did. So we're ready for the next 25 flights. Oh, man. I have to get Alan up here to start building these things for us.
I didn't say that could be one of those things that you get enough of those boards and you got a kind of a whole, kit that kind of works. You could probably sell those kits.
Well, I would hate to even sell this kit to anybody, because I would have more complaints about, I dropped the part and I can't find it, because the 0402 part.
Oh, man, yeah.
The 0402s are about the size of a backpack that goes on the back of a gnat, and if you drop one, even on a workbench, you don't find it.
Oh, yeah. They go into disappearium.
And, it took me a while to, when I first started building them, I thought, I quit seven times. I said, I will never do this. And finally, I mastered one of them, and I said, well, it can be done. And as I built more and more of them, it got easier. I could build one in about a couple hours.
Okay. Yeah, the 0402s are tough, though, man.
The 0402 is really, really small, and I found that, I thought I had a decent soldering iron, but, if somebody says, hey, send me the parts, I want to build one, first I'm going to tell them, you're not going to do it with a standard small tip soldering iron. It's going to have to be a teeny weeny soldering iron. And then
you don't want to sneeze with an 0402 part, or have cats or pets nearby.
Yeah.
Are you doing a solder paste and reflow then, or are you using a really fine tip iron?
Well, I use iron. I use a really small iron on them. And then there's a couple parts that we have to put down with the heat, Bill? The heat gun, the heat blower?
Hot air flow.
Heat gun and a little, good flux, and that you can heat and marry up and do it right that way.
But let me tell you, and I found, your technique gets better. Bill's an expert on this. I'm a beginner on this, but I found a technique that's working for me now. I took a wooden toothpick. And I took an X-Acto knife, and I whittled that toothpick down to the finest point that I could get. And then you stick that tip in some solder paste, and then you touch the board where you're going to put that resistor. And if you're not careful, as small as that is, you'll cross two different tracks on there. You got to be very careful.
Yep.
But I'll dab just a little bit on there. Just, you know, a whittled sharp toothpick's worth right on the end of it there. And then I'll, with the tweezers, and you're going to have to buy some special tweezers. You're not going to use the same tweezers that you pull the nose hairs out with, guys. You're going to have to get some good tweezers. And I'll lay that part on there, and I'll heat it up with the iron, and that solder paste will actually hold, you know, will hold it there, and then you can go do the other side okay, but it's
tough.
Yeah,
the other thing
I've
done with some of the smaller ones, well, I haven't done any 0402s recently, but even like the 0603s, if you got the part in the tweezers, you just dip each end of it in the solder paste and then put the part down on the board. So you apply the solder paste to the part instead of the board. Sometimes it's easier to not get shorts that way, but it's still...
Yeah.
And you can even when you have like these really small integrated circuit packages with a really fine pitch... usually if you use paste with that, the flux and the surface tension of the solder is good enough to usually avoid shorts if you don't put too much paste
so,
on
there. So, Bill, they make, the company got I had made the board, they make a solder mask that you can lay on there, but I don't see how you can put all that solder paste on a mask and pull it off. It just don't, I think it'd just be a big mess. Well, have you been using a...
I'm talking about a stencil.
The stencil.
Yeah, yeah. It works. The stencil is very smooth, and you have to squeegee it on, and then you just pull the stencil off, and then... Yeah.
Usually you need some kind of a frame to lift it off very straight, because usually if you try to pull it off by hand, you're going to slide it, and it'll just smear.
Yeah.
Smear everything.
Well, I can tell you...
And I use a picture of the most elegant design I've seen recently, actually... adjust an analog toaster oven with a servo hooked up to an Arduino. You told me about that, didn't you, Glenn?
No, it wasn't me.
Oh, one of my coworkers told me about this then.
It's a great idea.
It was, you get a cheap toaster oven, and instead of hacking into it and putting digital electronics, you just basically have a servo hooked to an Arduino doing the temperature profile. I thought that was the coolest idea.
In fact, if you throw a thermocouple inside and have it active feedback to kind of get the thermal profile, a little PID loop, and you're good to go.
Well, people are using just regular toasters, turning them sideways to heat that thing up, and you know, put your board in here. But I haven't tried anything like that.
I think I just gave Glenn an idea for another chapter.
No, I need to stop. It's interesting. I tried surface mount one time with a hot air gun. After setting off every smoke detector in the house, I realized that surface mount is not for me.
So. Well, you know, when I was in the Air Force, they sent me to a NASA standards micro miniature soldering school. And back then, they didn't know what small was, man. I mean, that was not micro miniature back then compared to today.
That was micro with a capital M, I guess.
Yeah, it was a macro, I think, and they had it was a typo. But, back then, they would inspect your solder joint under a microscope and, you know, see if it's cold or right or wrong or whatever. But I found, too, that... In building this, you've got to have high magnification, and I've got a binocular scope here that I don't think I can make it without it, to look for little shorts and things like that, you know, on the traces and solder joints to see how well they are. Guys, it's 9:30 here. We've been on an hour and a half. Let's go ahead and we'll close the show if you guys want to stick around a minute, and we'll talk after the show there. Let me say goodnight to everybody out there. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And if you're listening on WBCQ, shoot us an email, tom@w5kub. We'll be here next week. Same time, same place, and we're also on the Internet at W5KUB. Thanks, everybody. If you got any ideas about changing the name of Tech Tips, let us know. We'll
consider. If you got ideas of what you want to see in the, the Tech Tips segment, if you got questions, send them in, and we'll try to answer those during the segment.
So that's right.
Thanks again for inviting me. I'm excited to be part of the show.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much, and 73, we'll see you later. Good night, everybody. Glenn, I'm going to end with this video view, Glenn.
Here we go. Here, let me get your star for you then.
Here you go. I'm gonna get your star. Here we go.
So you're saying I can ask this cat any questions?
The cat is connected to the computer. You just type in the question. It will read this mic. There the answer goes.
You're the man! I've been looking for this for weeks.